Hello, and welcome to What is Innovation? The podcast that explores the reality of a word that is in danger of losing its meaning altogether. This podcast is produced by Outlast Consulting, LLC, a boutique consultancy that helps companies use innovation principles to solve their toughest business problems. I'm your host, Jared Simmons, and I'm so excited to have Dr. Akhtar Badshah. Dr. Akhtar Badshah is Chief Catalyst at Catalytic Innovators Group, where he advises organizations and individuals to catalyze their strategy focused on social and philanthropic investments. He also conducts purpose mindset leadership workshops with organizations to help individuals articulate their strengths and values and craft their purpose statement. A seasoned executive with over 30 years of experience in international development, managing a corporate philanthropic program, and co-founding a global nonprofit for social enterprise, Dr. Badshah led Microsoft's philanthropic efforts for 10 years, where he administered the company's community investment and employee contributions. He was instrumental in launching both Unlimited Potential and Youth Spark, the company's focus to bring digital technology to underserved communities and youth all over the world. A distinguished practitioner at the University of Washington at the Evans School of Public Policy and Governance, and a faculty advisor at the START Center in the Department of Global Health, he is the founder and curator of the university's Accelerating Social Transformation Program, a mid-career professional development certificate course on social impact. He is an accomplished artist, a doctoral graduate of the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, and author of the 2020 release, Purpose Mindset, How Microsoft Inspires Employees and Alumni to Change the World. Dr. Badshah and his family are very active philanthropists in the Seattle area. Dr. Badshah, thank you so much for joining us today. I'm so excited to hear your perspective on innovation and look forward to learning from you today.
I'm so glad to be here with you, Jared, and I'm really excited to share.
All right, well, let's dive right in. What, in your mind, is innovation?
I mean, I think most people kind of think about innovation as something completely undiscovered and brand new, right? It kind of gets conflated with invention.
Right.
But I actually think that innovation is very, very much how you approach the world.
Mm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
It's more a mindset issue.
Mm.
You know, we've kind of come from a world over the last 20 years where we've kind of said, you know, we really don't need to reward what people know.
I see.
And that's a fixed mindset.
Mm-hmm.
And we really need to reward people for the effort they put in and the ability to learn and grow. And that became a growth mindset, right? And innovation and invention kind of got put within that frame.
Got it.
I am kind of saying that we need to kind of go beyond that. And we need to really ask the question, why? Why are we doing what we are doing? And to me, innovation equates to purpose mindset. And purpose is where you're introducing the trinity of the community. It is really the ability to pick the right thing to do, not necessarily doing things the right way.
Got it.
So intent becomes part of how you think about innovation.
Intent. I see. I mean, that was such a new and fresh approach to thinking about innovation because it's so often tied to outcomes. And you're saying connecting it to effort and the growth mindset, but moving a step beyond that to why and the purpose aspect of it is the critical piece. That's fascinating. How do you see that play out? How can you tell when someone has a purpose mindset in an innovation context versus sort of that other sort of approach or view that you described?
So we obviously need a growth mindset, right?
Mm-hmm.
My friend and colleague, Aaron Hurst, and I are working on this together. He's written a book called The Purpose Economy.
Mm.
I've written a book called Purpose Mindset. And we both believe that at the end of the day, our approach should be that we need to obviously do things for self-benefit and for the benefit of our work.
Mm-hmm.
But true innovators really ask that big question of why are you doing this and for whose benefit?
Mm.
And at the end of the day, the benefit has to be to the community writ large.
Ah, I see.
Right? So you are introducing the trinity of the self, the work, and the community.
Got it.
Now, this doesn't mean that you are actually in the social benefit space, right? That you're just doing philanthropy or just giving back.
Right.
But it is really every day, how do you come out and say, I am here because I'm part of a larger community. And if the larger community does not benefit, I don't benefit either.
Mm, yeah, that's a mindset that's missing from a lot of definitions of innovation. It has gotten co-opted to mean invention or new technology or something new to the world. But the element like this trinity of self, community, and work, when I hear what you're talking about, I think of value.
Correct.
And there are lots of different forms of value. And if you attach innovation to just a monetary or a corporate definition of value, you would miss the self and the community aspects of it.
Yeah. And again, I want to be very clear that we want to make sure that people understand that we live within a capitalist business environment.
Right.
But we really shouldn't be living in a capitalist societal environment, right?
Mm.
Now, what has happened is that capitalism is the way we live versus the way we work or do business.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay. All right. Capitalism has become the way we live versus the way we work. And so by that definition, it kind of cuts out the more purpose-driven aspects of our lives. If it has become the way we live, the community and self aspects have been kind of diminished in that definition?
That is correct.
Okay.
That is correct.
Wow, that is brilliant. How do you see this unfolding in terms of either from capitalist business environment to capitalist societal environment, or examples where you've seen these things look different in places?
So things are changing, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, people are questioning this.
Yes.
People are questioning. People are saying and say, hey, what you're seeing with the great resignation, what you're seeing with the quiet quitting, all of this is just a way for people to say, let me step back.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the pandemic, I'm not sure that there is any individual in the world that has not got impacted.
Right.
In some form or the other.
Right.
Right. With closures, different ways in which you had to show up, different ways in which you've communicated, the fact that many of us actually got COVID.
Right.
Or know somebody that got COVID.
Mm-hmm.
Or got severely impacted by COVID. Actually, there is this whole journey of what everybody has gone through. And so people are now saying that, am I just going to show up to work? Or are we expecting something different?
Mm.
And nobody is questioning the fact that people need to make money and earn a living and have a system by which you are rewarded monetarily for what you do.
Mm-hmm.
But that shouldn't become the basis for your life.
Got it.
So that questioning has already started. And some of the work that we are doing is kind of getting people to start recognizing and crafting and creating and articulating their own individual purpose.
Mm.
Most of us have never written down our own purpose statement.
Right.
Why do you exist? We ask our kids, we are constantly telling our kids, who do you want to be? Right? We don't tell them, who do you want to serve? We don't ask them who you want to serve.
Right.
So it's that distinction, right? So now people are actually looking at it and saying, and so we are getting people to craft their purpose statement and through that connect it to their work.
Mm, okay.
And then finding ways by which their strengths, their values, and their purpose, individual purpose,
mm-hmm.
their personal strengths, their personal values are then being utilized first and foremost for yourself.
Of course.
For your family,
mm-hmm.
for your community, and for your work. And if you're doing all of that, then you're starting to find meaning in what you do. Because meaning just doesn't derive from work. And I think that's the piece that we've kind of got so consumed by work. Hopefully we're not spending more than 8-9 hours a day working.
Right, right.
The rest, you're actually doing something that is outside.
Mm, right.
And one gets purpose from that too.
I see. As I'm listening to your explanation of this sort of ecosystem of self, community, work, and family, it almost sounds like a corporate innovation sort of construct. individualized, almost like a portfolio of different focus areas, and taking a more structured approach to thinking about how to balance those things in your everyday life, and pulling the definitions of value that make the most sense to you, and prioritizing your time and your effort and your focus around your own set of priorities.
Correct. I mean, you know, there are several recent articles that have come out that actually highlight the purpose gap. Where companies, when you kind of go, McKinsey has done a study, a couple of other folks have done a study, and they show that the majority of senior executives believe that they've derived purpose from their work. The reverse is true for the rank and file employees.
Right.
85% of senior executives say that they derive purpose from their work. 85% of rank and file employees don't derive purpose from their work. And that's because we actually don't spend time getting those connections made.
I see.
And what we are doing is actually trying to make those connections. And one of the things that we are arguing is that your personal purpose and the purpose of your work should not be fully aligned. Because if it is, then you're just a robot. But there should be alignments. And you and your manager and your team should figure out those alignments. And as those alignments become stronger and those muscles become stronger,
sure,
then when there is friction, and there will always be tension and friction at work, those muscles will hold.
I see.
Right? You can then realize, hey, I do this because of this bigger impact we are having.
Right. It probably also makes organizations and individuals more resilient. As well, if you don't have everything kind of tied up in the work.
Correct. And I think that the big challenge is that we've kind of lost this ability to think that my purpose and my work has to be fully aligned. Now I go back to the thing. Now you're only living to work. You're not working to live.
Right. I see. I get it now. So if it's in full alignment, then you're still stacking the risk or the sort of exposure from a purpose standpoint is still all on your work. You're still connecting your worth to your work. It's just now aligned with your purpose, but the risk is still the same.
Correct. I mean, look, obviously there are people who, you know, most of their work, I mean, when you look at the Dalai Lama, or when you look at Martin Luther King, and when you look at Nelson Mandela and Mother Teresa, I mean, these are people who've kind of moved completely to the center of the bullseye.
Right.
And the bullseye being, we are all generous to a point, we are empathetic to a point, and we are compassionate to a point. Whereas these folks are totally compassionate, right? Where they're willing to give their life for somebody else that they don't know. But most of us are not going to be there. We are only going to be on that journey. And in that journey, we should still derive value of our contributions for the time that we spend on this planet.
Right.
And most people now equate that unless you have done something like that, you have added no value.
I see.
And I'm saying that's not true. Every single person has value.
Yeah.
So if we discover our strengths and we articulated our strengths and our values and our purpose, now you can use that as a way to prioritize what you do. Which doesn't mean everything you do has to be from that. Because at the end of the day, work is work. I mean, you know, I got to make calls. I got to pay the bills. I mean, you know, I don't want to do that. I mean, I mean, you know,
right.
I got to write memos, you know.
Right.
You know, when I teach my class, I love teaching, right? I mean, I love to be speaking, giving a talk. But I mean, you know, the after 10 papers, the 20th paper or the 30th paper you have to read,
right.
You kind of say, oh, my God, right?
Right. Yep.
But then you kind of have to align it to your purpose. You say, I've got to give that same attention to that 30th paper that I gave to the 20th paper or for the first paper.
Right. That focus to do that comes from the alignment with your purpose.
Correct.
That makes sense. It feels like you talked about the great resignation, quiet quitting and all these things. It seems like there's a broader misalignment around how tasks are viewed in the context of work. So the two things we hear about a lot are working from home and these different remote work scenarios and environments. And it seems to me very task focused, kind of analogous to your grading papers example. And it feels like we're missing the broader conversation around purpose, to your point. where the headlines and everything are focused more on a tactical aspect of the experience and less on why is this a deal breaker? Why is whether you drive to the office every day or not suddenly a deal breaker? To me, it's because just what you're describing, the alignment is off. And it's more about fixing the alignment than deciding whether it's 2 days or 3 days or 4 days or 1 day in the office.
Yeah, again, I mean, this is a very interesting issue, right? What is it that gets you to be in a physical space with somebody?
Mm-hmm.
If it is just for a routine meeting, we now have kind of figured out that, hey, I can do that as effectively sitting on Zoom.
Right, right.
But if it is a collaborative task, and if I now understand the purpose of that collaborative task versus that I have to complete that task,
mm-hmm.
we may actually find that, hey, coming together and working on it is much more beneficial.
Right.
And therefore, I will commute.
Right. Exactly. But in that example, the purpose pulls you into the office instead of
correct.
You being told that you have to be in the office.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
And I think that's what our work that we've done now with over 3,000 people have participated through our workshops with large companies, small companies, government organizations, universities, nonprofit organizations from around the world. We've had participants from 70 different countries.
Mm, wow.
CEOs of companies to board members of organizations, deans of institutions to ministers and government agencies to young people. Rank and file folks.
Right.
And what we found is the energy that comes in as you're getting people to actually not talk about the title of the job that they have versus the larger purpose of what it is that they want to see as an impact.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So again, it kind of brings you back to this notion of doing the right thing.
Right.
Versus doing things the right way.
Right.
And my book, I give an example of an organization that actually does cornea transplants. And the new CEO that came in, she came in from Microsoft and, you know, brought in the typical ROI approach of efficiency.
Right.
And that's correct. I mean, she's saying, look, you know, we are a resource-constrained organization. We're not like Microsoft. We have unlimited amount of resources.
Right.
We are a nonprofit. We are doing some work around transplants. And let me just kind of look into how I can make the process of us performing procedures around the world much more efficient.
Mm-hmm.
And if we can reduce the cost, which means we can actually do more with the same amount of resources.
Right, yeah.
Very logical. She quickly discovered that if she went down this path, she's just going to lose her stuff.
Gotcha.
Right?
Yeah.
So she then kind of understood and said, what if I took some of our top talent in the U.S., these highly trained physicians who basically sit here, and get them to travel around the world and mentor people, other physicians in these resource-constrained environments? And what would that do?
I see. Yeah.
And what it did is that it actually brought in new acumen and new insights to these folks, whether it's in India or Africa or other parts of the world. And her cost of doing these transplants went down from $600 to $134.
Wow. That's unbelievable.
So she figured out that it was not efficiency that was important. It was effectiveness.
Mm.
And if you can get to effectiveness, you're automatically being efficient.
Yes, yes, yes.
It is, again, the perspective of which path do you want to go down?
I see. Now, that's a great example because she took sort of a people-driven approach, and a knee-jerk response would have been a process-driven sort of approach. Let's go revamp the process. Let's look at where the pain points are. Let's drive the cost down and teach these folks how to do this more efficiently, like you said.
It's also a very well-established approach, right?
It is.
We've got the tools and techniques to do that.
It does. Yeah.
Whereas the other one, she had no idea whether this would be successful.
Right. Exactly. It takes a lot of courage and a lot of foresight for her to take that approach.
Correct. So it is risky.
Mm-hmm. For sure. For sure. But I think it's more sustainable. And that's kind of what I've learned as we've been doing consulting and coaching work in my firm. We tend to lead with the more humanistic, people-centric solution first versus the efficiency-driven process approach. Because when you lead with the process, there tends to be more of a rejection to the solution, even if it is the right approach. if it doesn't spring from something that people feel some amount of ownership and buy-in and investment in, it doesn't really stick.
That is correct. That is exactly correct, right? So it is this understanding of this determination, right? So when I kind of look at my purpose mindset in my book, I kind of came up with five principles.
Okay.
The first is work from your strengths. We spend way too much time focused on our weaknesses.
Mm-hmm.
I've got to improve. If I had to put down a litany of my weaknesses, you know, it will never end. Right? But if you kind of identified your five strengths, just write down your five strengths. What are you good at?
Mm-hmm.
And then figure out on a daily basis, weekly basis, are you utilizing that in some form or the other? And if you are, now you're actually bringing value and impact, because that's what then drives you.
Right.
And by the way, this is a neurological phenomenon.
Hmm.
And neuroscientists will say your brain actually reacts much more effectively when you're actually working from strengths than from weaknesses.
That makes sense.
Peter Drucker basically says the task of leadership is to align strengths so your weaknesses become irrelevant.
I like that.
Right. So the first thing is just articulate your strengths and then keep track of whether you're actually applying your strengths or not.
Got it.
Second, put on a lens of abundance. We get too mired into this frame of scarcity. If only I had this. If only I got permission.
Right.
If only somebody opened the door for me.
Hmm.
And just as an example, during the pandemic in May of 2020, a bunch of us basically came up with this crazy idea that if we could actually get everybody to wear a mask, we could keep our economy open and everybody safe.
Right.
And we just started off to evangelize it. And over a year-long effort through just grabbing resources from here and there around the world through our outreach and advocacy work, we reached over 100 million people.
Wow.
And we did this through Facebook and Facebook ads. And
sure.
And we measured it.
Right.
And we had a 4.5% conversion rate.
Wow.
Which is huge.
Yeah, that's amazing.
I mean, that essentially led to saving of lives.
Yeah. No doubt.
And we just did it because a bunch of idiots kind of felt that this is a good thing to do. And we started off with nothing. And we just kind of found connections and connections and connections and just did it. And that was purpose driven. So abundance is important. The third is focus on the effectiveness of what you're doing versus the efficiency. I just gave you the example of, you know, picking the right thing to do versus doing things the right way.
Mm.
Fourth, we are now in the age of igniting movements.
Mm.
We are no longer in the age of just creating organizations.
Interesting. Yeah.
Organizations are a vessel by which movements are eventually formalized.
Right.
And therefore, the skills you need is no longer being an effective manager, but you have to be an effective conductor, a synchronizer. You synchronize movements. You conduct movements. You catalyze movements. You don't manage movements.
Right, right.
And then eventually, you know, as I mentioned earlier, how do we move on that path from generosity to empathy to compassion? So we are moving away from the focus on the me
right.
to the focus on the we and the common good.
Got it.
That to me becomes innovation.
It's such an elegant construct to think about it in, because just among those five principles, it really touches on a lot of the things in terms of leadership. It touches on resource allocation. It touches on prioritization, but all in a humanistic first principles kind of way that makes it easy to engage in and to think about how to apply it to the way you work and live.
You know, in March of 2021, I got a call through some mutual introduction. These five individuals were on the phone on Zoom with me, and they said, "Hey, we've been asked to get in touch with you. We've been recently released from prison. We've spent over 20 plus years each incarcerated.
Wow.
And we found purpose in prison and we've been released and we want your help."
Mm.
And I mean, we are all biased, right, as humans.
Sure.
And yeah, I'm seeing their faces and I'm listening to them.
Sure.
My wife is in the other room. And she's just listening to their voices. And she came back and said, "This is one of the most articulate folks, group of people that I've ever heard."
Mm-hmm.
"Who were you talking to?"
Wow.
These are some of the most well-read individuals. They all spent 20 plus years in prison. they now want to change the way in which we treat formerly incarcerated people by focusing on their mind and not on their body and getting them to work in the high-tech sector.
Interesting.
Because what they said was that when we went in, we were all in our 20s and we were essentially in the California penitentiary system, and we were essentially told that, you know, the only way you come out is in a pine box.
Wow.
Our physical environment was confined, but our minds were never confined. And it took us a while to recognize that. And once we recognized that, then we started to thrive. And they basically worked with training prisoners to become entrepreneurs, to become educated, to stop doing drugs and all of those things. That, to me, is the spirit in which we actually think about innovation through our mind.
I see.
Now, these guys have all been out. They worked with the California state legislature, and they've now got a substantial amount of funding to make this a reality.
Oh, that's fantastic. That is wonderful.
Again, these are people who you would never expect to contribute anything to society.
Sure. So as you think about that, it's such a powerful story. Is that something that is scalable and reapplicable? Do you think this is something that was unique to these five individuals? Their premise is that they can scale this to other folks. Do you think that's feasible?
Yeah.
And what's the mechanism behind that? Is it the same sort of approach that you're describing? Like you said, there's a lot of bias and constrained resources. I'm excited by the prospect of what they're doing, and I'm curious what scale looks like for that.
So, you know, this is this perennial question, right?
Yeah.
That we have somehow convinced ourselves in the world that scale is the most important thing.
Right.
And therefore, our view of scale is that every single thing should become a whale.
Right.
Whereas actually, you can have the same amount of scale by thinking of yourself as a salmon.
Mm-hmm.
Salmons are far more plentiful, far more resilient, far more nutritious.
Yes.
So how do you think of scale?
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to do it all, or are you going to find avenues through which it will multiply?
Right.
Are you going to take the McDonald's model of create a franchise? Or are you going to take a Chinese restaurant model and say it's a spread?
Mm-hmm.
Spread versus scale.
Right.
Both achieve the same thing.
Right.
In different ways. Ideas spread, businesses scale.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this goes right back to the igniting a movement versus creating an organization, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Now, if they are successful in their way, they can inspire lots of people in different parts of the country and the world to do the same thing.
Exactly. Exactly.
Or modify it.
Mm-hmm.
Or change it.
Right. Right. Yeah. I'm so glad you said that, because it is the first thing people talk about. Is scale in the business world and entrepreneurship, accelerators, incubators, all those things. How do you get to scale? And I was fascinated by your igniting movements versus creating an organization, because to me, that's how you break that mindset, is the fact that ideas spread. And if you see things as a movement, then you don't have to spend time operating outside of your strengths, trying to figure out how to build an organization with a construct to prepare for scale. You can focus on igniting a movement that spreads of its own volition with synchronized connectivity versus focusing on management.
Right.
That's fascinating. So we've talked about that innovation is about how you approach the world. And we've looked at some examples from your work. Those things in my mind lead me down a path of advice. What advice do you have for innovators, movement starters, however you want to frame it? What words of wisdom or advice can you offer?
So while I was at Microsoft, people would come to me all the time.
Yeah, I bet.
And say, I have a passion to make a difference in the world. I want to work for you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I would always shake my head. And I'd say, if you got a passion to change the world, just go do it. Why do you need me? I mean, go volunteer.
Right.
Nobody's stopping you from going and volunteer. Go to a food kitchen and spend a weekend there.
Right.
Go help a child read.
Mm.
Or do math. Nobody's stopping you to doing that. So it always kind of annoyed me to a great extent that people just threw in passion as a stand-in for, hey, I'm so good.
Interesting. Yep.
So that's part of the reason why I kind of wrote the book on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
That there has to be a different way to think about it. So when you kind of even pass out, what does it actually mean to be innovative.
Right.
And how do you think about that? So I came up with the six C's.
Mm-hmm.
First and foremost, you've got to have conviction. That is in your ability and yourself, which starts with your strengths. Second, you've got to be creative.
Mm, right.
You've got to have some vision of something that you want to leave behind, which is not just going to be for yourself, but for somebody else.
Right.
That's what innovation is for.
Mm.
Third, you've got to then build your capability.
Right.
Probably not know everything about it. So you've got to go build and learn.
Right.
I don't assume that I know everything.
And that's from a knowledge standpoint, not from a strength standpoint. You're not trying to fix your weaknesses. You're closing the knowledge gaps you have.
Correct. It's the knowledge gap.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's the knowledge gap. Then you have to build the capacity, mm-hmm. which essentially means, who do I bring along with me?
Right.
Who else do I need?
Yep.
I don't have to go fix my weaknesses. I can get somebody else's strengths that align and complement.
Right.
If we all in a group just sat down and listed all our strengths and said, okay, let's work from that, almost all weaknesses would be eliminated.
Mm, right.
Then there is this whole question of commitment, because you will run into obstacles. You will run into failures. You will run into setbacks.
Right.
You will run into naysayers. And that's all good.
Mm-hmm.
Constraints. You will run into constraints.
Mm, right.
Constraints are excellent for innovation.
Yes.
Right? So that commitment and constraints are what will eventually get you to succeed. And you only succeed if you have developed compassion. Where whatever you are doing is for the greater good.
Mm, wow. Yeah. And the compassion piece, I can imagine there's an element for the external world, but there's also an element of self-compassion as well, in terms of people who have, I know personally, I deal with perfectionistic tendencies and trying to get everything right versus trying to be helpful. So I would imagine there's an internal and an external need for compassion as well.
First, it is an internal need,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You're actually going to change yourself.
Yeah. That's amazing. Such a great list for innovation. And that's what's been core to this podcast, is there are curricula for innovation, but there's not a set definition or a set of skills that people agree on and say, all right, this is what you need to do to be innovative. This is what an innovator looks like. And I love this list because it is agnostic of technology. It's agnostic of scale, return and value definitions and all those things. I think this is something that can be universally useful to folks as they think about impact.
Yeah. And again, when you kind of think about these lists, the lists kind of become your how.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not interested in the how.
Yeah.
I'm interested in the why.
Yeah.
Why do you exist?
Mm-hmm.
If you can figure that out, then the how is easy.
Right.
So when you kind of think about it, Amanda Gorman, our poet laureate,
mm-hmm.
who read her poem during President Biden's inauguration, she said it fantastically. I mean, she said, for there is always light if we are brave enough to see it. If only we are brave enough to be it.
Mm.
Purpose is the light switch. Turn it on.
Mm.
We are our light. You can smile or you can frown. If you smile, you light up.
Right.
So think about innovation from that frame.
Mm. Oh, that's powerful. That's very powerful stuff. Thank you so much, Dr. Batchelor, for sharing your thoughts with us around innovation and all the context around purpose. Thoughts of that innovation is how you approach the world, and then the various contexts you shared around the how, that it will empower us to be able to focus more on the why, because the how is the easy part. I really appreciate your time and thank you so much for joining us today.
You're very welcome, Jared. I greatly enjoyed this conversation. I really loved this kind of open-ended conversation that allowed us to be a little bit more engaging.
Yeah. It went in some really fascinating and powerful directions, and I'm sure this will be it was a great conversation for me personally, and I'm sure it'll be powerful for our listeners. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Take care.
All right. Take care. We'd love to hear your thoughts about this week's show. You can drop us a line on Twitter at Outlast LLC, OutlastLLC. Or follow us on LinkedIn, where we're Outlast Consulting. Until next time, keep innovating, whatever that means.